Who says tech can't be human?
What is going on, Hacker Valley fam? Welcome back to the show. For anyone that works in cyber, a piece of tension that we always feel is the balance between building fast and not breaking things. It's like there's this high-speed chase of advancement. And, you know, we look at advancement of things like AI. And there's also this battle of dodging a $4.4 million mistake. That mistake, my friends, is a breach. $4.4 million is the average cost of a breach in 2023. That's no secret. And when it comes to building fast, we know that the best way to do this is through SaaS apps. SaaS apps give us a great level of productivity. Without SaaS apps, we wouldn't be here today. We are using LinkedIn, YouTube, and the platform that I'm streaming is also a SaaS application. As the title implies for this stream, we're going to be speaking all about building fast and not breaking things. One important thing to note is that this session is completely live. I'm joining you from the great state of Texas via the city of Austin. And this session is going to be exceptional. Sessions like this are exceptional because of, you know, having great guests. We're going to be speaking about building great things. And Valence Security is sponsoring this episode. So please give Valence a like, a follow, check out their website. And really checking out our partners like Valence Security is the best way to support the show and also support you in your goal of building fast and not breaking things. When it comes to something like SaaS security, we know that we need to consult with experts, especially subject matter experts that can help us not get breached. And today I have a great guest with me. My guest this episode is Shlomi Matichin. Shlomi is the co-founder and CTO at Valence Security. Shlomi, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ron. Pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to have you. I'm very appreciative that you're able to join us. But Shlomi, I would also love for you to introduce yourself and, you know, let us know a little bit about your background, but through the perspective of your founder's journey, how did you get to Valence Security today?
So I always wanted to do startups since I was a small kid. I started programming when I was 8 years old. I fell in love with computers, with software, way before it was a very lucrative profession. I started professionally coding in my university years, even before the army. So in Israel, you have a mandatory army service. I joined at the age of 19 after already finishing my master's degree. After 4.5 years of service, I joined a startup company as the VP R&D, joined another startup as the software manager, and I was the first employee of a third startup. In each of those stops, I was actually looking to start my own company and kind of got pulled into someone else's venture. And I said, that's enough, and I'm going to start my own startup. And I started Capester with two co-founders from the army days. Capester eventually shut down. And at that time, my first child was born. So I thought I can be a stay-at-home dad. That held for a few months before pulling me back into the industry and again igniting that passion to build my own thing and to bring it to the world. So currently, Valence is my second time as a co-founder and CTO.
I want to definitely get into the meat of the matter here, which is building fast. I would imagine that part of your founder's journey was figuring out that people keep making the same mistakes. And maybe these mistakes are manifested in new ways, especially through something like SaaS. But, you know, what is the root of, you know, building fast, but leaving some vulnerabilities, leaving some misconfigurations? Is it culture? Is it just that technology is growing so fast? What's at the root of it?
It's a lot of good intentions, but good intentions are the road to you know where. So I would say this, most developers that are not fixed on tech, but are fixed on product, and you can kind of draw a line there, start their journey as juniors. And when you are a junior developer, it feels like a superpower. So basically you can create something out of nothing in a few days and get the feedback that it's working and delivering value to customers in another few days. That's something that just doesn't happen anywhere else. So you get thrilled and you start to push yourself out of the world and you build more things. And you eventually, because of that speed, also repeat some mistakes that other developers have done. And as time passes by, you become a more senior developer. And then you understand that it doesn't just matter how many lines of code and how many feature count I'm delivering, but actually, does it bring product value? And then your journey turns into, hey, am I actually building something that someone needs? But it only takes a few years longer for you to reach the point where you understand that you can build too much, that complexity can actually hurt, that you can actually put your users and end users at risk or in a disadvantage by having too much software. Lines of code are actually something that you carry on your back, and not necessarily more lines of code means better software. So that journey, unfortunately, does not take a year or two. It usually takes longer than that, sometimes even 10 and 15 years, really depends on the person. And when you reach that, you eventually passed at least a significant part of your career. So you look backwards and say, OMG, all the mistakes I did, all the fast building and everything, I created this wake of destruction behind me while I was learning these lessons, that eventually it's the same lessons that people have learned over and over again. Security should matter. It should matter from day one. It should be shifted left. It should be something that the entire organization discusses. But everyone reaches that at a different point in their journey because you don't start there. You start with that enthusiasm that causes you to run fast and try to deliver as much content as possible.
Absolutely. I love the sentiment about when you're a junior developer, it's all about just going forward and building a bunch of things. I have built a lot of custom tech for Hacker Valley, and I do know that the more that I personally build is tech debt, because it's great in the beginning. You know, I'm spending technology capital, but after that, you know, technology starts to become older and new ideas come out, maybe new ways to exploit come out or services change, then it leaves me vulnerable or it leaves bugs in our workflows, which is just as bad in a lot of cases. Please allow me to jump in for a second and share a few details about our sponsor for this episode, Valence Security. We all contribute to the SaaS security problem. Have you recently connected an AI tool to Google Calendar or even Slack? Or have you shared a file by enabling anyone with the link to open it? Oops. With SaaS tools managed by different teams, IT can't see everything. This is where Valence Security comes in. Their team provides SaaS security posture management and remediation capabilities that enable your company to find and fix SaaS risk. From misconfigurations and identity risks to third-party integrations, Valence Security has you covered. With their solution, you can easily reduce your attack surface with automated workflows and business user collaboration. You can secure your SaaS environment today with Valence Security. Check them out by visiting valencesecurity.com and let them know that Hacker Valley sent you. Thank you, Valence Security, for sponsoring this episode. So I gotta ask, you know, when it comes to this challenge of building fast, like, is that really the intent behind organizations? I feel like sometimes it does feel like, you know, we're always just trying to go 0 to 100, foot on the gas pedal, never letting up. But other times it feels like we're trying to slow down, but the best way to slow down is by hurrying up and fix something or hurrying up and provide value to a customer. So even for your own business, do you feel as though you all are building fast, or is it building intentionally?
So one of my mentors has a saying, which goes, what's the purpose of the brakes in the car, right? Why would you have a brake in the car? And when you ask that, people, sometimes you get the answer, well, it's to stop the car, but that's not true. Like, if you really look at why the brakes were put in place, is actually for you to go faster. Because if you cannot have that safety option of stopping well and in short distances, you will not go fast in the first place, because you want to stay safe. So I think it's, and you also use the term tech debt, and I think tech debt has a problem when it's coming to cybersecurity. And the reason is, when you say debt, you kind of feel that's something that you can easily, slowly repay over time, like a mortgage or a loan, but it's all good and true until you reach that $4.4 million breach. Then, so I think risk and tech debt are actually not the same concept. And I think what you should actually be measuring and working on is risk.
So let's double tap into that. You know, where you all focus on SaaS, and I don't think that it's really understood of the risks that SaaS, you know, pose. I did hear a stat from Cybersecurity Cloud Security Alliance where they talked about, like, I think it was like 60% of breaches or cybersecurity incidents are due to SaaS applications. But how are those incidents or breaches, how do they occur? Is it through someone not having MFA? Is it a variety of factors? Would love to hear your take on that.
So there's some misconception in the industry about what does it mean to secure your SaaS? Mm-hmm. Because SaaS platforms are inherently secure. If I have Google Workspace or Microsoft 365, I'm done, right? These are organizations that are securing their services. But that's not 100% correct, right? You have the shared responsibility model. You have the complementary user end user controls that you have in your compliance documents. You have a responsibility by using the SaaS to properly secure it and have the compensating controls on your end. So the problem is that a lot of organizations have a lot of focus on the things that we kind of used to secure. Our servers, whether on-prem or self-hosted on our own cloud infrastructure. But more and more business processes are actually handled and being all the data is stored on SaaS platforms. So you'll have document sharing and you have financial processes and you have marketing processes and sales processes and more platforms that offer also development and DevOps features are actually SaaS platforms. So not following through with correct policies and measuring your risk and having good visibility in the security team creates this black hole in the organization when more of these processes move to the other part of the cloud, the SaaS part of the cloud, but no good and quality controls exist to help the users onboard these safely. So what you're trying to do is have your users use these platforms. These are good platforms. They have a lot of value to offer you as an organization, but you do need to be able to adopt them securely. And that's kind of what the business that we are in.
One way I think we could put everybody on game is talking about something like Google Workspace. I use it. Most organizations I've worked at use Google Workspace. They use Google Drive, Google Calendar, Google Mail, and it's powerful. It really brings your team together, or even Slack. You know, we could also talk about Slack. These are both great SaaS products that everybody uses. So, and it's probably the first thing that you onboard as well. Like if you're trying to build fast, first thing you gotta do is get a domain and then set up your email so you can start registering for all the other SaaS applications. What should someone be looking at when they're going fast and, you know, rapidly onboarding Google Workspace first and then Slack?
So what happens usually when you onboard Google, you will register a domain, then you'll configure your email security, your DMARC, your DKIM, and you kind of think, okay, well, I'm done. Maybe I should visit some of the security settings, pick a few checkboxes, I'm done. Well, the truth is that platforms like Google have a lot of power given to every end user, every business user in your organization. Every business user can create email forwarding rules and have emails directly forwarded outside the organization. Every user can share a file, can share a folder, can share the entire drive or their entire calendar. Every user can create an integration. Some integrations have very limited access to your data, but in some permissions, the third party for that integration actually have access to all the user's data. And some of these integrations are being offered as clicks inside the platform. So you took a Google Workspace as an example. In Google Workspace, if you open a PDF file And you have right there on the top of the screen, this button that says, hey, click here. You have a little drop down and edit PDF. Now, edit PDF actually installs an integration. That means a third party now has access to that document. And the more you use these are the financial incentive of Google and other platforms is to make you click as many of those buttons as possible. They want you to onboard all the applications from their app store and all the integrations so you can get all the value out of the Google Workspace, which again, is a good thing to be able to access quickly, but you get left with a lot of excessive access or unmonitored access, third parties that you should not be trusting that have access to your data. And having visibility into that, I would say continuous usage of the platforms is what most organizations don't have. And by the way, if you read the SOC 2 Type 2 report for Google Workspace in the complementary end user controls, they actually tell you, monitor all your integrations, monitor all your data shares, monitor all your forwarding. It's written there. But it's really difficult to do without proper automations around it.
That's a good point. You know, for our workspace, we have all the integrations turned off, like where it's like there's a pre-approved list and then you could request other ones. But I never thought about the email forwarding piece. And that's a big one. I mean, that might be even more important than the Google integrations, because I would imagine maybe more people forward their emails to some like their Gmail or another party, even email delegation as well. Like a lot of people work with executive assistants. And do you know who that executive assistant is? Did they sign an NDA? You know, these types of things could like have those checks in place before you just allow someone to delegate or forward their email. So that's a really good look. And then there's Slack. So walk us through the same thing with Slack. What should someone be considering when it comes to building fast and trying to get Slack in or Microsoft Teams in as quickly as possible?
Would that be okay if I just reference two things that you said before we go to Slack?
Please.
All right. So first of all, you said executive assistants. Now, we saw some really strange, dangerous stuff out there. For example, an executive assistant that shared the passport image of the CEO just because she was trying to book a flight. So mistakes happen all the time. And the reason is that it's very easy to make them. It's just human to do so. And the second thing that you mentioned is that you blocked integrations on your Google Workspace, which I would guess work in small organizations.
Right.
The problem is the larger you become, you can't really be a bottleneck that stops a business from adopting additional technologies. First of all, it doesn't scale in terms of having to be that block. And second of all, you will be perceived as a security practitioner. The organization will start hating you and they will start circumventing your controls. They will open the SaaS platforms with their own personal users, username and email, and they will try to get the value because they are, by the end of the day, their success is measured by their KPI, and the tools that exist out there on SaaS platforms are really powerful. Organizations cannot really afford to not use those. So the more the organization scales, the more complex it is to put a complete gatekeeping controls on adoption. You will eventually have to have this conversation where you want them to be able to use this. These are disabling these kind of features. Think of it as buying a Ferrari and driving on first gear. Like that doesn't make sense. You have all that richness of options to collaborate and to be able to be effective on your day-to-day. Turning those off is a serious issue for a lot of organizations. You are basically putting your success back by not enabling this. So again, I can understand why it works for Hacker Valley, but that's not, I think, a plausible recommendation for other organizations. Now, if you want, we can go talk about
this. Yeah, I completely agree. And what I was gonna say on top of that is when I worked for a fintech startup, they did have all the integrations turned off. And I do recall my team kind of coming up with creative ways to either build a custom API within our Google Workspace or through the Google APIs to circumvent the fact that there's not a custom there's not the ability to bring in a developed application. So you start building a custom application that does the same thing, and that really defeats the purpose of that rule. And it kind of makes it even more important to make sure that you have proper access controls. I'm sure that's something that you will help with. I do want to speak about Valence, but let's jump into that Slack example first.
So Slack has this feature. I don't know if you try this. You paste the URL of an app and says, hey, we have that app on the marketplace. Click here.
Yep.
So this is the disparity between how easy it is to click something, because you click, I want to install this. Then you click, I agree, in that window that we all click, I agree, and no one ever reads, which, again, it's a sign of the times, right? We are moving fast.
I feel called out right now.
Yeah. By the way, as a security practitioner, I actually read those. And sometimes I like, why do you need that permission? Do you really need access to everything I have on Slack? So the problem there is that a lot of users think they are actually doing a best practice. They are using the built-in feature of the platform. And they don't understand that what's actually happening in that consent screen is that a third party is now accessing their data. So the danger here, it's a form of a easy consent, but try and ask yourself this. Do you know how you undo that consent? Do you know where that screen in Slack where you can delete the permission that you just gave that app? So do you?
So when I see those pop-ups, like maybe it's an OAuth grant or something similar, you know, especially for Slack, I did not know that you can do that. I know that you can do that when you have the consent form, like, hey, do you agree to do all these things? And sometimes there's options, like I want to give it a little bit or I want to give it everything. But I did up until now, no, I did not know that you could do that in Slack.
All right. So Slack encourages you to install. To uninstall is a user flow, user journey that most users never took. There's nothing in the platform that encourages you to clean up unused access. Like you have that on your phone, right? This app hasn't been active. Let's disable it. Let's remove it.
Yeah.
But that doesn't exist on most platforms.
But it exists in Slack?
No.
Oh,
not
okay.
That I'm
all
aware
right.
of. So what happens is that you keep access for things that even if you tried it for a single day, the user even didn't understand that this is what they chose to do. Now it has access to a channel, to some sort of data on your Slack mm-hmm. platform, and that access just remains. Oath consents stay forever. And in some platforms, not, but in most platforms, they do. And now that third party, if it gets breached, that hacker can do exactly what the hackers in SolarWinds did, where instead of just attacking SolarWinds customers, they were able to attack customers of SolarWinds using exactly these techniques. They stole the certificates, they stole the tokens, and they just kept laterally moving between organizations using all that those tokens. Also happens in the GitHub breach with CircleCI and Heroku. Mm-hmm. Same stuff. Once you have a token that has access to data, and I like the story with specifically with Heroku and the breach with GitHub, is because Heroku has a free tier, right? Most of these SaaS platforms believe in a model that's called product-led growth, right? You offer a free version or a free tier or a trial or some sort of a freebie for the first user in the organization to start onboarding the SaaS, see the value, and then the business belief is that this user will cause more to join him and then eventually for the organization to purchase that SaaS offering, right? That happens in most SaaS platforms. But the problem is here, let's say a developer onboarded the Heroku and tried that first tier, that free tier. Tried it and didn't like it and just stopped using it after a day. Well, Heroku has still the access that that user chose to give it.
Right.
A few years later, someone comes in and steals Heroku tokens. Now, do you want to own something that a few years back some developer did for a single day? You should really hope that developer didn't give it access to your most important repository, because now the hackers have your data.
Yeah, 100%. I got a question. Which SaaS apps worry you the most? Which one worries you the most? And is there any story behind why that SaaS app or that type of SaaS app worries you?
Ooh, So I think it's very dependent on how you utilize SaaS and what kind of data ends up there. So I wouldn't say there's one answer for them all, but I'll give you one story, which eventually caused the CISO of that organization to personally WhatsApp my partner and say, hey, I am sleeping better tonight, thanks to your automated remediation. And the story goes like this. We connected to their NetSuite and we found that they automatically share all the invoices out of the NetSuite globally to everyone that can access the link. And that is, of course, a big, big exposure. That's a lot of financial data for the organization to be exposing. Now, why that came to be? That came to be because some of these platforms, especially NetSuite and Salesforce and Workday, employ a model where you basically have some sort of a service provider provide code to customize the platform for you, right? So in Salesforce, you have someone developing Apex classes and customizing the way that the UI works for you to be able to have the customized workflow that you need in your Salesforce. And the same happens in NetSuite. Now, in what that specific provider did is that, of course, is to copy-paste a code from a different project. Because that's what they do. They go and do projects in every company and they copy paste the same set of files, just change it to according to your requirements and cash out with a project. So the problem is one of the things that was copied is that feature to share those files externally, but it was never erased. So the only way to actually monitor that is to be able to have a central list of everything that's shared and notice that something is changing without properly implementing that control of having knowledge what is actually being shared, you would not be able to capture that mistake. Nobody's code reviewing these developers, right?
Not the way that they could. I mean, it's hard to understand. I feel like even to code review or like audit a security practitioner, like all the requirements are still growing to where it feels like they're very loose, like very general safety precautions, but to make sure that that information is properly reported and understood and done the right way, I think it's a tall order. And I wanted to talk about reducing that order and making it manageable. I know that that's kind of the journey and the goal of Valence Security. So I think it's only right, you know, Valence is sponsoring this episode. You're, you know, kind of pioneering the space of SaaS security. What does Valence do and how does it relate to this topic of, you know, SaaS and building fast?
So Valence is a product where you can connect to your crown jewels SaaS platforms. So I would call that the core of your SaaS usage. That will be your Google Workspace, Microsoft 365, NetSuite, Workday, Zoom, Salesforce, and other platforms that you will usually find at the center of your organization usage in the SaaS. We support over 60 platforms now. And what we do there is we connect with an agentless platform that basically pulls out configuration, metadata, and audit logs. We don't actually touch data. We only pull out the metadata. We analyze all this and create a central repository of all your exposure. And the exposure can be misconfigurations in terms of toggles and things that you should probably configure as an administrative level on that SaaS platforms. Identity issues like improper implementation of MFA, dormant accounts, which was a lot in latest attacks used by, for example, in Midnight Blizzard lately, and have an inventory of all your data shares, everything that is currently exposed from these platforms. And finally, your third-party applications, integration, the SaaS to SaaS connectivity, and have all that centered in a single location and be able to review that, put a control around it. So the first part of the platform is how to get that data into a central single pane of glass. And once you do get that data, you usually get six digits of individual issues. It's very rare if you have a growing organization that's been using SaaS for multiple years to just end up with something it's very limited. And as we all know, it's 2024. We need to be able to do more with less and just looking at problems you cannot do anything with is not an acceptable product to have. So the second part of Valence is the automated remediation, where you basically define your policy, you define how much human intervention you want in each point in the process. You use the automation to pull in the context, the business context from the business users that did the configuration, that created the integration, that created the email forwarding rules, that creating the data share, and have them answer, is it still required? Can I remove this? And have the entire process automated with low overhead in terms of human resources needed from the security team. Because otherwise, if I'll show you all that and not give you a tool to actually do anything about it, not sure you're better off.
What's the one thing that you'd recommend for them to start on this journey of SaaS security to be one step better?
So I would go with educate yourself. So don't assume that these platforms are secure. Understand the shared responsibility model. And if you have the time, which is, again, very low effort, do a free assessment with Valence. We'll actually tell you your posture, and it doesn't cost money. So try to understand what you don't know, because the attacks that come from the things that you don't know that you don't know are the most dangerous one, right? Because you didn't manage the risk. You are not aware the risk is there. If you are aware the risk is there and you choose to say, hey, I understand, but here are my priorities, then you're doing it right. But don't keep things in the unknown.
Don't do it. Don't do it. And Shlomi, wanted to say thank you from the bottom of our hearts. Thank you to also Valence Security. You all not only sponsored this episode, but you guys didn't ask me to speak about the product or ask you about the company. But I love what you all are building. I speak to all of the founders that we work with on this podcast, you know, especially if they're a sponsor, and I get to know their products. I get to know their solutions. I get to know their company. So I would highly encourage everyone to check out valencesecurity.com and see what they have to offer. Shlomi is a great resource. Be sure that you connect with Shlomi as well. Shlomi, thank you again. Thank you, Valence Security. Thank you to everyone that's tuning in live. And with that, we will see everyone next time.
Thank you, Ron.